All right, Alexander, let's talk about what's going on between Russia and Ukraine. And this also is connected to a lot of the energy stuff. I was reading an article about a day or two ago where I believe it wasn't Zelensky, but I believe his energy minister making comments how they want guarantees from Russia that the pipeline's going to continue to work for 15 years, not just 2024, but you know, another 10 years plus. And they also said that they're not going to give up on dismantling Nord Stream 2. Meanwhile, the U.S. is providing all kinds of arms to Ukraine. And we did a video on Turkey. Turkey's giving them drones as well. And it looks like that we may be heading, it looked like we may be heading towards some conflict, but maybe things have died down. But I feel like we are in some sort of drift towards a war. There was also a decree a couple of weeks ago, I believe, by Putin, where it was a decree with the Donbass, where he made a statement like, you know, the Donbass will come under, will self-rule or will come under Russian supervision, I believe. And it was in retaliation for the lack of implementation of the Minsk Accords as well. I'll find the decree as you jump into the video and read out maybe some of what Putin said. But anyway, a lot of developments in and around Ukraine, whether you're looking at a war, a conflict, energy, Nord Stream 2, pick your spots you want
right,
to talk
well,
about.
First of all, let's talk about war, because of course, you're absolutely right. This is an unsustainable situation. I think we are drifting towards a war, but it looks as if, I mean, we have to be very careful what we say because the situation can change from one day to the next. But it looks as if the war has been called off this winter, just as it was called off in the spring. And I'm going to make a prediction. By the way, I'm going to start this program by saying that we're going to have a lot of these situations of stop-go where the war is concerned. Talk of war, things heating up, everything looks ready to go to war. The administration in Washington steps in to call it off for all kinds of reasons. And this will continue for a while. And then eventually things will begin to break down. The ability of Washington to restrain the situation will end, or maybe more hardline people in Washington will take over. But it's very difficult to see now how this situation can end without some kind of a war at some point. I mean, that's the first thing to say. But let's just go back and talk about what's happened. I mean, because it's not been entirely clear, but things have begun to sort of, all the pieces are starting to fall into place about what has happened over the summer and autumn. Firstly, if you remember, at the start of this year, Zelensky moved all his troops to the ceasefire line. There was this big face-off. It looked as if the Ukrainians were about to launch an attack. The Russians responded with a counter-mobilization, and the Ukrainians backed off after Biden picked up the telephone, spoke to Putin. The two agreed to defuse the situation, and there was a summit meeting in Geneva in June. So that was what happened in the spring and early summer. There was a diffusion, the situation was de-escalated. But then we got a whole series of very complicated negotiation attempts. And firstly, it's clear that someone, we don't quite know who, but I'm guessing it was a combination perhaps of Blinken in Washington and Heiko Maas, who's this very arrogant, very incompetent foreign minister that Germany has at the moment. They tried to get a negotiation going between Ukraine and Russia, cutting out the representatives of the Donbass in an effort to try to get the Russians to accept that they were a party to the conflict, which, of course, the Russians were never going to do. And the Russians became increasingly angry about these attempts. There was a telephone call between Putin and Merkel and Macron in which Merkel and Macron tried to pressure Putin into agreeing a summit meeting with Zelensky, with the Germans and the French present, when the Russians realized that this is another attempt by the Western powers, the Germans and the French, to set up direct negotiations between them and Ukraine. The Russians said, enough's enough, we're not prepared to do that. All negotiations, all discussions are called off. What we're looking for is for Ukraine to start its negotiations with the Donbass republics, as it is required to do by the Minsk agreement. So this is what happened a few weeks ago. Over the course of October, there was a total breakdown in the negotiations. In the meantime, we see this trickle of arms to Ukraine. Now, we have to make a distinction between the arms that the US is supplying and the arms which Turkey is supplying. The US is supplying Javelin anti-tank missiles, and there's talk that they might supply Stinger, these handheld anti-aircraft missiles. Now, the important thing to say about these weapons is that they are potent weapons, obviously. The Russians would far rather they weren't provided, the Ukrainians weren't provided with these weapons, but they are, in a sense, defensive weapons. You use Javelin anti-tank missiles when tanks are heading in your direction. So, in a sense, they are defensive systems. The same is true of these hand-portable anti-aircraft missiles, which, by the way, the Russians anyway believe that they are able to counter. So these are token supplies of weapons. They're not the kind of heavy weapons like tanks, Abrams tanks, or fighter jets, or those sort of things, which the US could supply, but which would indeed look like they were preparing the Ukrainian military for an offensive. The Turkish supplies are much different and much more dangerous, because the drones that the Turks have supplied are precisely offensive weapons. They're the sort of weapons that you use in order to carry out airstrikes on the rear areas of your opponent, and they are fully consistent with an offensive. So the Russians and the Donbass militia are far more concerned about the Turkish supplies than they are about the American ones. I think that's an important point and distinction to make. Nonetheless, those supplies took place. That's made the Ukrainians much more confident. There's also been all those ships sailing in the Black Sea. We've had a lot of very belligerent comments from Ukraine, even as the negotiations, as I said, unraveled. And we've also had this sustained attempt by someone in Washington to talk up the story of a Russian, imminent Russian offensive against Ukraine this winter. Now, there was actually no troop movements by Russia, which actually suggested that the Russians were planning an offensive. The Russians have again repeatedly said they will respond if an offensive is going, if the Ukrainians launch an offensive, but they are not looking to start an offensive themselves. So lots of talk about a military offensive by Russia, which has no real foundation, a festering political, economic crisis in Ukraine. It looks as if Zelensky has lost control of the Ukrainian parliament. There's talk that his party there has split. I don't have the exact details. There's also talk now that some of the oligarchs are manoeuvring to have him removed. And there's apparently a media campaign against him within Ukraine. So a deteriorating picture in Ukraine. Lots of talk of war. Lots of talk that perhaps with these Turkish drones, the Ukrainians might be thinking again of launching some sort of an attack. And then again, the same thing happened as happened in April in the spring. The Biden White House has at the last moment stepped in, said, you know, clearly to the Ukrainians, we don't want a war. They're again doing the same thing all over again that they did last spring, summer. They got line open to Putin. They're negotiating to set up a summit meeting with Putin in a few weeks. And as a result, the Ukrainians have now said, the Ukrainian foreign minister has now come out and said that there's no plan by Ukraine to launch an offensive on the Donbass. So you can see how the tension escalated and then it was brought down again with all this talk about a summit meeting. And I suspect this is going to continue. We're going to have the stop-go situation, push always towards trying to settle the situation in eastern Ukraine by force, which is what the Ukrainians would love to do and some of their backers in Washington and in Europe want them to do. The Biden administration at the last moment stepping in each case to call it off, knowing that Ukraine would be defeated and it doesn't want another foreign policy debacle. And more practically, it is terrified that in the event of such a military crisis in Ukraine, there would be a major concerted attempt to impose sanctions on Russia, which would interrupt Russian oil and gas exports, causing energy prices to spiral upwards, which in a time of high inflation is the very last thing the Biden administration wants to see at this time. So they've called it off a second time. But will this continue? Will we have the same thing happen a third, a fourth, a fifth time? I think that sooner or later, as I said, something will break down and a war will happen, because clearly there is a major impetus from some quarter to have a war. The situation in Ukraine itself is getting very bad, and it looks as if the Ukrainians, sensing that they're also about to lose the Donbass completely, because what the decree that you said by Putin, what it does is it removes restrictions on trade between the Donbass republics and Russia. It integrates them more closely, in effect, into the Russian economy. With all of that going on, sooner or later, something will break. Most probably, that Ukrainian offensive will be launched, and at some point, we will see a war, because I can't see this administration pulling off this trick again for much longer in the future.
Yeah, the decree, I have it right here in front of me, supporting the population of Donbass region, not under Kiev's control, as purely humanitarian response to Ukraine's refusal to honor the Minsk Accords. Russia's authorized representative in the contact group on settling the situation in eastern Ukraine, Boris Gryzlov, said. So yeah, it is a response to the breakdown with the Minsk Accords. And yes, that's the point. Each side is making incremental steps in preparation for that slip-up, which is,
yes,
to me, sounds almost inevitable unless,
yes,
everyone completely pulls back, ratchets down the rhetoric, and follows the Minsk Accords. I mean, that's the way out of this, is
absolutely
to follow the Minsk Accords. But, you know, we've had the Minsk Accords now for 5-6 years, and
absolutely
no one's going to follow them.
No.
That's for sure. Ukraine is dead set on not following them. The U.S. is not pressuring Ukraine to follow them, nor is the EU. So, you know, we're at a stalemate, and they continue to try and bait Russia into admitting for some reason that it's part of the Minsk agreements, which it's not. And many people think that Russia is a party to these accords.
No.
It's not. They didn't sign one piece of paper or one document with regards to Minsk. So there's a lot of fake news out there as far as where Russia stands in the Minsk agreement. But the fear is also that Ukraine is going to go for broke. You didn't even talk about the Ukrainian economy, the energy situation. The fear is that Ukraine might say, because you also have two vacuums in a way, a vacuum in Washington, D.C., and a vacuum in Ukraine that's forming. And what's to stop someone in Ukraine from trying to fill that vacuum and saying, you know what, everything's disintegrating, go for it. Let's go take over the Donbass, in which case the Russians will.
That is exactly the fear. Before I get to Ukraine, I mean, on the subject of the Minsk agreement, it's important to say that the Minsk agreement specifically obliges Ukraine to enter into negotiations with the leaders of the two republics of the Donbass. It's there in black and white. It treats the conflict in Ukraine as an internal affair. Germany and France brokered, along with Russia, that Minsk agreement. The Russians proposed it to the UN Security Council, put it to the UN Security Council. France voted, to my recollection, voted for it. The United States and Britain did not veto it. They all accepted it. So there is a UN Security Council resolution incorporating the Minsk Agreement, which poses no obligation upon Russia, but which in effect says that the conflict in Ukraine is an internal one. Now, up to now, up to what happened this summer, is that the Americans, the Germans and the French gave token support to the Minsk Agreement, but were not prepared to put pressure on Ukraine to get it to be changed. What happened this summer and what has led to the collapse of the negotiations is that, in effect, while still pretending that they support the German and French, while still pretending to support the Minsk Agreement, what the Germans and the French did, especially the Germans, was that they tried to get them completely rewritten so that instead of being an internal conflict, it became an external conflict and a conflict between Russia and Ukraine. And the Russians categorically, straight out, said no. And this has caused a shock, by the way. The Germans and the French are astonished that that happened. They thought that, you know, they were going to get this meeting set up between Putin and Zelensky and all kinds of things were going to be gingered and papered over. They didn't understand that the Russians had seen directly through what was happening. And over the course of October, the Russians directly called their bluff. They said, are you prepared to back direct negotiations between Kiev and the republics in the Donbass or not? And the Germans and the French dithered and didn't provide a coherent answer. And at that point, the Russians said, look, you're clearly not serious about this. We're calling the negotiations off. We resume again only when the Minsk agreements, as originally written, as confirmed in a Security Council resolution, are once again the basis upon which the pathway to a resolution of this conflict is going to be followed. So that was what happened. Now, turning to the economic situation, the political situation in Ukraine, you are absolutely right. There's a power vacuum in Washington, and you see various hardliners and more sort of realistic people in Washington maneuvering. So you have the sort of stop-go type situation. You have people like General Lloyd Austin going to Ukraine, say, oh, of course, one day Ukraine will be part of NATO. You see Blinken talking about how, United States stands rock solid behind Ukraine. And then you get the other people who say, my gosh, what are you doing? We can't have a war at this time. That would be an absolute debacle for us. We would Ukraine would lose. Energy prices would go through the roof. And do you understand what you're doing? Anyway, there are those tensions, the neocons and the sort of quasi-realists. That is an ongoing, endless argument that is taking place in Washington. But it's matched by a political crisis in Ukraine, because there's now universal contempt within Ukraine for Zelensky himself. He's not trusted by any party. He repudiated his election promises to seek peace in eastern Ukraine, to protect the rights of Russian speakers, to improve relations with Russia. He went to the opposite extreme. And at the same time, the economic situation is going there from bad to worse. And of course, the Ukrainians remain deeply concerned about Nord Stream 2, because of course, its certification has been delayed. But the latest information from the German regulator is that the German regulator is still looking to complete the certification process by January. So this delay that people were worrying about, it's, as I said, for the moment, it looks like a technical delay. So Nord Stream 2 probably comes online sometime in the summer. Ukraine's position as a transit state then becomes unsustainable. The Ukrainians are talking about wanting to remain in that position for 15 years. There's no way the Russians will agree to that. Or if they do agree to that, they will quietly turn the tap off. So there is this nightmare scenario for Ukraine where it loses its position as a transit state, where it no longer gets the payments, the $3 billion payments a year from Russia for the benefit of being a transit state. More importantly, it can't siphon off gas from this pipeline to keep Ukrainian homes and industries heated, because that's what Ukraine has been doing. That's what reverse flow, as it's called, is really all about. So Ukraine is in a deep crisis. Its president, as I said, is universally held in contempt. The political system is breaking down. The secretary of Russia's Security Council, a person called Petrushev, says that the looks like that there could even be a complete total breakdown in Ukraine this winter. And it's entirely possible that at some point someone in the Ukrainian political system, and more importantly in its military and security forces, is going to say, this is such a disaster, let's go for broke, let's start this war, let's hope that over the course of a war the West will rally behind us, and if it doesn't, and if we lose, well, at least we will go down gloriously. We will go down fighting, and we'll be able to say to our people and to future generations, well, it wasn't that we messed up totally in Ukraine. It was that the Russians invaded and destroyed us. So, you know, you can so easily see that sort of thinking in Ukraine. And of course, it points very much towards war, because even if the governments in Washington and Berlin were united in wanting Ukraine to pursue peace, the political situation within Ukraine itself is becoming so unstable that those voices of restraint from Washington and Berlin might eventually cease to be heeded anymore. Or if they're heeded by some people, if, say, Zelensky says, right, I'm calling the offensive off, it could very well be that the hardliners in Ukraine's National Security and Defence Council will simply ignore him and will launch an offensive anyway, or maybe even carry out a coup. We can't say, but it's difficult to see how this can end in any other way than that.
Yeah, and just a final note, keep in mind that a war in Ukraine between Russia and Ukraine also benefits a lot of the forces in the US and the EU, which may also see it as the ultimate distraction for their collapsing systems and their collapsing policies and their collapsing leadership as well. So a lot of people are holding a war in Ukraine as a plan B in their back pocket. Absolutely. Saying, you know, if things really break down to the point of, you know, everything is just bust, well, we're going to need to draw people's attention somewhere else. And who better than Putin and Russia, you know?
Exactly. I mean, the calculus is exactly the same as the one for Ukraine. So if you have rising energy costs, if energy prices are rising anyway, and we've seen that despite, just exactly as we predicted, despite Biden releasing oil from his reserves, all that's happened is that oil prices immediately responded by rising. So, you know, if the situation continues to get worse in that respect, and you get a major economic recession, and you're going to start losing elections, and things are going to go wrong for you, well, what you can do at that situation is start a war in Ukraine, impose those sanctions, cut yourself off from that oil and gas that was flowing from Russia, and then blame the Russians for the whole mess. Say that, you know, it wasn't us that caused the recession. It wasn't our money printing. It wasn't our failed energy policies. It was, Dr. Evil himself, Mr. Putin in Moscow, in the Kremlin, controlling, you know, like the great spider, all the things. He's the person who launches these aggressive wars in Ukraine. And, you know, we have to cope with them. And it's not our fault. It's all his malevolent planning that's brought it about. And what we need to do is unite behind our governments, accept the various controls we're going to impose on you, because we need to protect ourselves from his nefarious plans. You can see that calculus as well.
That's the plan B or the plan C, whatever it is. That's that's going to be their last option. And, you know, they've done it before, so it wouldn't be surprising if they do a distraction like this again. Anyway.
Absolutely.
That's exactly where this is heading towards. Okay, we'll leave it there. The Duran.locals.com. Look for us there. And Duran Shop. Use the code GOODDAY. And it is 10% off all merch, everything that you purchase on the Duran. And I'll also have some Good Day merch, which I will put up on the site as well. You may recognize that slogan if you watch Alexander's Open on his videos.
In the meantime, can I say to all Americans celebrating Thanksgiving that, you know, our minds are with you, and our you know, you have our love and respect, and you can see that here I am with my magic mug with the flag of the USA.
All right. Take care, everybody.